Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
I'm Grace Parajani. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be.
Wherever you may be. Grace, it's our last episode of 2021. Despite this year, which has arguably been fucking worse than 2020, as if that's possible. Did you have any highlights from this year? Anything that was awesome? Anything you're looking forward to in 2022?
Well, this was the second wedding for me in as many years, a pandemic bride twice. So that was fun. It sort of sounded like I said pandemic pride, which is not something I'm proud of, but I meant to say pandemic bride. So anyway, yes, I was a pandemic bride two times over. That was delightful. Honeymoon in Greece was delightful. But you know, I spent a lot of time in my home and not seeing a lot of loved ones, which was not ideal. But I'm very grateful for vaccines. Got my booster, so I'm very grateful for that.
I am also boosted.
Yes, thank God. I'm looking forward to, you know what I'm looking forward to, Alyssa? I'll tell you
what. What?
I'm looking forward to discovering something for myself in 2022 that isn't productive, that isn't like leading to something, that isn't like a hobby that I could maybe turn into something that I sell or work or something that's gonna like make my abs pop or whatever. I just wanna do something that's like actively a waste of time and feel good about it.
Okay, well, that is like, that's a goal. That's for sure a goal.
Like a craft of some kind.
You can craft, but I have to tell you something. We're all a little bit type A. It's like, I started making jam. I'm like, it's just for me. And so the thing I'm proud of is that this year I've made like 1,500 jars of jam by myself,
Alyssa,
with my fingers and my pots and my stoves.
That's incredible.
For 2022, I am hoping 2021 to me felt like the year where you always thought there was another shoe to drop, and there always was. It's like just when you think it's going to be fine, then something else happens. So I'm hoping just, I don't know, for fun. I can't say I had a lot of fun this year. So I'm hoping for some fun in 2022. But you know what's going to be fun?
Tell me. I can't wait.
Today's episode. Let's get to it. Today, I'm joined by Grace Parajani, Naomi Ekparagon, and Megan Gailey to answer the following questions. Are holiday movies getting more progressive? Is Fran Drescher the ultimate Christmas mom? What holiday movie can be defended in 60 seconds or less? All this and more coming up. Okay, guys, now for the show. I'm shaking in my stockings, and Caroline wrote that, so I had to say it. I am so excited for today's episode because not only are we talking about one of my favorite topics, Christmas movies, we have an all-star lineup today. Joining me and Grace, first, she's a stand-up. She's the podcast queen. She hosts I Love a Lifetime Movie and Megan Fun of Sports. It's Megan Gailey.
Woo! Fall on your knees.
Oh, hear the angels moan. We made it part of the way.
Wow, Grace, I have a list of hobbies I could give you that are leading nowhere.
okay, I need them.
That's
want them.
Mostly all I do. Are you a sports fan? Because boy, is that a good waste
of
time.
See, sports is great. And now though, I've got fantasy football. I've got survivor leagues. And so it's turned into something with stakes that means something. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, but I'm looking for that thing that's meaningless. You know?
Oh my gosh. Cool wife alert.
Listen, you guys, next. She's back, folks. Do you know what my Christmas miracle is? My Christmas miracle is that Naomi Ekparagon is here to talk Christmas. She's a stand-up. She also hosts I Love a Lifetime Movie with Megan and hosts her own podcast with her fiance, Couples Therapy. And her new half-hour special premieres on season 3 of The Stand-Ups on Netflix December 29th. Naomi Ekparagon, you know what I'm going to be doing on December 29th.
Yes, honey. Y'all bitches too high functioning. That's why I don't come through here, okay? Because this one over here is like, I wish everything I did wasn't so productive. And then you over here, Anne of Green Gables with 1,500 jars of jam. And I ain't even gotten a jar.
Oh, so, listen, but now you've been back, so you're going to get a jar. I've been using it.
I had to come back to get a jar?
Yes, you did.
Y'all should have said that. from the jump, and I would have been back.
I mean, listen, but wait, here's the thing, Naomi. I'm going to now obviously anticipate the drop of your stand-up special on Netflix. Here's the question.
Yes.
When I sit down to watch it, am I going to get Mr. Big dying in the first episode? Because that seemed to happen when I get excited for things.
I know. I understand. Nothing can be that dark and that poorly executed. I promise you, I am bringing you my A game.
Well, let me tell you, I will be having my super high octane eggnog and settling in.
Oh, what's in it?
A lot of stuff. It's mostly, it's like egg whites and booze.
Yeah.
Great.
Nice.
And some fresh nutmeg.
Breakfast of champions.
Yeah. Ooh. And I think you should curl up with a nice joint too.
I'm telling you, I'm going to try the joint and then the eggnog and see how I like you better, Naomi.
Oh, honey, I've tried both of those. I don't like myself better either way. Now, Megan, I like that you're trying to get everybody drunk and high, Megan. I guess because you can't be drunk and high.
I'm
Is that it?
So jealous. Yeah, truly. We just got back from our quote unquote baby moon. And I remember being not pregnant and being like, God, a baby moon looks terrible. And now having been on one, I'm like, it's fun, but it is a little boring.
Okay, you guys. So in honor of Naomi and Megan's podcast, I Love a Lifetime Movie, today we're talking about holiday movies, and more specifically, all of the wonderful, insane, problematic, magical, batshit holiday movie tropes, because there are so many. As I mentioned last week, we all watched Lifetime's The Christmas Setup. Listeners, I hope you did too. First, we're going to get into that movie and then broaden the discussion to all the holiday movies. Yes, so let's get into it. All right. So guys, I'm going to give the plot of the Christmas Setup. The Christmas Setup follows the story of New York lawyer Hugo, who heads to Milwaukee with his best friend Madeline to spend the holidays with his brother Aiden and his mom, Kate. Very important. Kate, played by Fran Drescher. We'll get to that later. She's a fucking queen. Kate, who is also in charge of the local Christmas celebrations, ever the matchmaker, Kate arranges for Hugo to run into Patrick, Hugo's high school friend and secret crush, who has recently returned after a successful stint in Silicon Valley. Who doesn't have a successful stint in Silicon Valley, I guess?
Absolutely.
Relatable.
As they enjoy the local holiday festivities together, Hugo and Patrick's attraction to each other is undeniable, and it looks as though Kate's Santa-style matchmaking is a success. But as Hugo receives word of a big promotion requiring a move to London, he must decide what is most important to him. In the end, guess what? He chooses love, because ain't that the Christmas spirit? Okay, Grace, I'm turning to you first. What were your initial thoughts about this movie?
I'll be honest. This is the first Lifetime holiday movie I've ever seen.
What the fuck?
I know. I think it was a doozy. I think it was a doozy. I think it was really good. It gave me all the things that I wanted. It gave me a best friend who didn't have a personality outside of the best friend. Uh-huh. It gave me a promotion that meant everything to the main character. It gave me a lot of hatred for New York City. It gave me the sense that Milwaukee was a small town when the population is 600,000 people. That was engaging to me. I really enjoyed it. I absolutely teared up. I think the biggest takeaway, of course, is Queen Fran Drescher, SAG-AFTRA president, who sends us emails and also stars in Lifetime movies as the mom that we all wish we had.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Naomi.
Well, okay, fun
please,
fact.
Please.
Hugo and Patrick are played by real life husbands.
Yes.
Ben Lewis and Blake Lee.
Yes.
That's the layer that you could not bring to the table. I felt the chemistry was electric. Thank God. Can you imagine being married to someone and then people being like, I don't buy it? So thank God, electric. What I also really enjoyed was, I think for me, the best part about this movie is the traveling through time 100 years earlier, where there was also gay lovers, two men on a train in a train station, secretly in love. Megan and I have talked about writing that film, that prequel to The Christmas Setup, 1901 style. And you know, it really told us what matters most of all. In that movie, every single person ends in a relationship. Every single person. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it is the whole point is, you know, Christmas is nothing unless someone loves you. Mm-hmm. And that's such an important message to send to people as they struggle during the dark holidays.
Yeah, I mean, it's giving gay love. It's giving interracial love.
Yes.
It's giving Fran Drescher and Frank. You know, will they, won't they?
Yes.
We're getting a deep New York accent in Milwaukee. we're finding out that Milwaukee has a flourishing LGBTQ plus community.
Sure.
And Naomi and I first watched this movie in June, I think, because Lifetime was doing like a Christmas in July. And so we had to watch it a bit before that and got to interview Fran and the two gentlemen that played Patrick and Hugo. And they are so lovely. And all of these movies are filmed like in the summertime. It fully transports you. It's timeless. Even though we watched it in June, it was probably filmed in May. You're like, I'm in Milwaukee and it's December 22nd. And is there a place I'd rather be? Maybe. But when you're seeing it, you go, this train station. The historical elements. It's just a really feel good. And I know you mentioned that these movies tend to be problematic, and this one sort of bucks that trend.
It does.
And Naomi and I contest on our podcast too. We don't really get it in this, but Lifetime's also very ACAB. So we've got a lot of breaking of barriers on the Lifetime Network, and specifically with this holiday film.
What, Grace, was the most ridiculous part of the movie to you?
Okay, so there's a few options on the table. I want to talk about the best friend and the fact that she has been spending all of her holidays in the Bahamas and for some reason decided this year she was not only going to just cancel on going to the Bahamas, but cancel without backup plans. Like she announces this to Hugo and is just like, I'm not going to go this year. And Hugo's like, do you have any other plans? And she's like, not really. And he's like, I guess you could just come home with me. And she's like, okay, great. Thank you so much. I don't know who would choose Milwaukee over the Bahamas, but fine. So to me, the most ridiculous part is like, what is this best friend do? I guess she's a teacher. Is that what she does? She's a teacher.
She's a third grade teacher. But wait, doesn't she not go to the Bahamas because she's the only single person in her family? And she feels like a sad, lonely person when she's around all of them.
Right. I feel like the whole reason you go to the Bahamas is so that you find somebody.
As someone who's gone on single family trips to the Bahamas, you can find somebody. Okay. I've found some gentlemen there.
See, I have to say, like, I love my family so much. Obviously, I live 30 minutes from them now, but I kind of found that part super relatable because when you're the lady who's almost 46 years old and you don't have kids, It starts, and you're the one who shows up. It's like, you know, are you just the cater waiter? You know,
And I'm guessing they go to the Atlantis, and they probably didn't say that for branding reasons. And if you do have children in your party and you're dining at the Atlantis, you have to have dinner before like 6 p.m. And you're me, and I'm like three sheets to the wind, and it's 5:45, and it's like, okay, well, I guess I got to go find a Houston Rockets player to make out with. And so it's just, I agree, Alyssa, very relatable.
Okay. Very relatable. Naomi, what did you think was the most ludicrous part of the movie?
To really be that close to your mother. You know, that Hugo, first of all, okay, the one part relatable when he gets home and literally there's like a mile long to-do list and it's like, you will not be sleeping during your vacation. I felt that was real. But the idea that you would choose to spend so much time hanging out with your mom and just your mom, I just felt like, I'm sorry, what Christmas are you having? Okay? We all need time apart. Not a single person went into the bathroom to cry the entire film. That's not real to me. That is not real for a holiday time.
That or not one member, you know, took a walk outside either to smoke a cigarette or a joint. Like, come on. They're too old for that.
Absolutely.
Do you think that if your Fran Drescher were your mother, though, that you'd want to be her best friend? I mean, is that really just the thing?
Look, Fran is cool, okay? We love Fran as an icon. However, too overbearing. I couldn't take it. Yeah. I couldn't take it. And so I think it's like, yeah, you're probably fun to like have at a dinner party for 2 hours, but I couldn't have you telling me what to do with my time. Because yes, she set everyone up in this movie and it happened to work out. But let's think about all the years that things didn't work out, okay? She doesn't bat 100. Fran's not batting 100. She just got lucky in the world of this motion picture. Also, can we point out, I would like to call everyone there is doing their own stunts because Megan, you said it shoots in May. These movies are shooting in like August, okay? And I need you guys, these people are giving us cable knit. They're giving us wool. They're giving us pea coat realness. They're giving us scarves in August in Vancouver, okay? Stunt work. That's what I call it.
I think that the most painful part of the movie for me was towards the end when they're in the train station and everyone's writing their letter to Santa and Patrick's like, I don't have to ask Santa for anything this year. And I was like, oh, come on. Yes, you do. Okay.
Wait, what does he have to ask for? Because I thought he would have said, I don't have to ask Santa for anything because I'm a 38-year-old man. And this is pretty ridiculous.
And a Silicon Valley like tycoon, right?
Right.
But
yeah,
no, it's that he found love with Hugo. Therefore, he needs nothing.
I also love that Patrick was just comfortably out in high school. I struggle to believe it just because like I feel like Indianapolis and Milwaukee are similar. There were definitely guys who were out in high school, but they were not like
popular and cool.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh my God, he was like prom king or whatever. And I'm like, this is fictional.
It is also, I think, implied, tell me what you guys think about this, implied that the military on leave older brother is absolutely QAnon, right?
Or no.
Well, I mean, no. I just got the vibes that like the tension between him and Hugo was because he didn't necessarily,
he's conservative.
He's just conservative.
Yeah, exactly.
Grace, I'm going to tell you, I imagine he is what your husband looks like as a person I've never met. I just know he's like blonde.
High and tight.
And yeah, I imagine your husband is also like giving us kind of that like, high and tight, military, chiseled jaw energy. Yeah.
Sure, and then absolutely. And then ends up with a small brown woman as a wife. And you're like, I didn't expect this, but like,
just
sure.
Just like Aiden in the movie.
Just like Aiden.
Oh,
yes. Yes.
Wait. Megan, what are some of the biggest holiday movie tropes in this movie?
So obviously the Christmas tree shopping.
Obviously.
And that is something that it's almost like apple orchards where they have now almost had a rebirth because of social media. And you see people going and cutting down their own tree. Men that I'm like, I don't think you have a proper shoe for that. But they're out there. They're doing it. Definitely the caroling. I have said this on the podcast. I come from a musical family. My dad has been Jesus in the play. And we have never caroled, ever. And everyone's caroling, apparently. Just Naomi and I have learned that there have to be green or red. Everyone needs to be in green or red. There must be lights or a Christmas tree in every single scene. There's just sort of like checklist things that if you don't see a Christmas tree, you will forget that it's a movie about Christmas. And so they really shove it down your throat in a way that I love. I thought the Northern Lights was kind of a fun scientific ad.
Loved that. Had to Google Northern Lights because I didn't realize that's what they look like. And I'm a city gal who never really understands.
Right.
Like, I heard about it, but never saw them. And it's like, that's authentic. That's what they look like.
Well, and we definitely looked up if you could see them in Milwaukee. And I think it was pushing it, but
sure.
Suspending some disbelief.
Especially on Christmas Eve. One thing I agree, Megan, it's very odd that it just happens spontaneously with no rehearsal. But to the point about them not having had any rehearsal, they actually sounded like they didn't have any rehearsal. There was no three-part harmony. I was worried about that. I was worried I was going to hear some tenor and some alto and some bass, and that was going to be unrealistic for me. But the fact that they all just sang melody, I was like, okay, that I can buy.
The other number one biggest, like I tried to think of a holiday movie where this doesn't happen, Snow on Christmas. Yeah. You guys, it's becoming absolutely so fantastical. I mean, I live in upstate New York, and the past three Christmases, I think it's been over 55 degrees. Right. And so the more that it keeps snowing in these movies, the more I'm like, what a fantasy.
Yeah.
Right.
Wouldn't that be nice? Wait. Okay. Naomi.
Yes.
Naomi.
Yes.
Fran Drescher.
Yes.
Is there anybody who could have played this role better?
Other than myself. Let me think. Honestly, no. Honestly, she was perfection. From the moment you like hear her voice over the phone, you know, before you even see her, it's like, this is Fran. And also, because I will say this, she was so believable to me.
Totally.
You know, and as someone who is, she is a Jewish woman who loves Christmas IRL. So she was not having to fake any of that. I really like it because I also I often find that the parents in these things are like, they're always sweet, but they don't have much personality to me.
Right.
You know what I mean? The movies tend to, they're serving whoever the young people in love are, and like mom or dad, never both. Okay. Someone has to be deceased.
Yeah. That's a trope. Widower for sure.
They're just there to like give knowing advice or be like, follow your heart. And I like that Fran was just like having fun, yelling at people. And she was insisting on this train station. She said she even took part in a sit-in.
Yes.
She's an activist.
She's an activist. A young Elizabeth Warren on our hands. They almost tiptoe into like, is she an angel? Is the Christmas spirit being funneled through this Jewish woman?
Interesting. Is she deceased and she appears as an otherworldly figure?
Or is her
just to set people up?
Her carpenter dead husband giving her the spirit of Christmas. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I hope he's given her a little more too. You know, if he's coming as a spirit, I hope there's ghost sex, if you know what I mean.
Do you think there's a world in which Fran Drescher looking, because she's a smoke show. I mean, she is an attractive lady.
Yeah. She kept it tight.
Oh my God, by any standards, but especially Milwaukee. I mean,
Would
she really be single? Would she really be single?
By choice, I think
she
would.
By her own choice.
She'd be like, none of these guys are good enough for me. And you know, I've got she has a busy schedule. We saw
Very
that.
Very busy.
She doesn't
Very
have
busy.
Time. And men at that age, they need you to be putting out their medications. They need, you know, you got to set out their clothes for them. They need a lot of help. And Fran, she's like, I've been a caregiver. And so I don't need to do that again.
My mom says this. She's a single lady in her 70s. She says, I'm not a nurse and I'm not a purse.
Mm. Yeah.
And I feel like that is Fran Drescher's vibe in this movie
Mama Para. I'm into that whole energy. Now, Alyssa, I'm going to turn the tables on you because you know what I like to do.
Do it.
Now, talk to me about, you know, again, you as a farmer, you know, as a farmer's wife.
Yes. As Diane Keaton in Baby Boom.
Exactly.
CJ Wyatt. Keep going.
How, you know, again, you're making jam year round. That's not even Christmas. What are some of the Christmas confections you're bringing to the table? You know what I mean? Ooh. As someone who just knows their way around a spice and a pectin and things of that nature.
It's funny that you say that because just this morning I finished my gingerbread angels and my gingerbread stars.
Wow.
Okay. And I have to tell
Christmas is a while away.
It is. It's. But you know what? So this is the time of year when I start wrapping up the cookies in cute packages and delivering them with jam to my neighbors. Okay.
With jam.
You guys, I put them all in a box. I decorate them cutely and I drop them off on people's doorsteps. And I also did my Christmas stollen, which my oma used to be the one to make. And she passed away. I mean, it's about 6 years ago now, I think. And no one in my family was like interested in putting in the time because it's a commitment, especially if you make your candied fruit from scratch, which I obviously did.
Naturally.
So you guys, the stollen are wrapped and they are ripening so that the rum can infuse throughout.
Sure.
The gingerbread cookies. And then I'm just waiting for the cat head cookie cutters so I can make my sugar cookies. Exactly. And then that's up on deck for this week.
Naomi,
are you doing anything? Are you baking anything for your
That's why I'm just asking what you're up to. You know, I'm famously in a relationship with a Jewish man. And So Christmas is not really his time. And it's been interesting because normally in a pre-pandemic world, we would be in New York where right. I would get to have my touch of Christmas with family. We haven't done that the last 2 years. Last year was kind of like, what even is time or holidays? But this year I did put up two stockings. Oh. His is blue and silver. Nothing about it is Hanukkah except for those colors. And I was like, and it doesn't say Christmas on it. It's just a snowman.
Oh.
And so I did a little touch of that, and I'm going to see if I could put my dog in an outfit, but that's about as far as I'll probably go.
Okay, so Naomi, you know, I am famously married to a Jewish man, and yes! let me just tell you that I have brought him along into the Christmas trimetry. He's always like, oh, you do it best. And I'm like, I bought you some ornaments. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you love the Beatles. Look what I got you. Beatles ornaments. Wow. I'll do anything to get him to just let me keep doing more. You know, it's like, no, you're a part of this too. Mm-hmm. So guys, while I make my cookies and my stollen, I continue to watch all of my holiday movies. Mm-hmm. So moving on to other holiday movies. So our Christmas movie that we watched was a bit of a tiptoe into a more progressive era of Christmas movies, which are historically very hetero, very white, very specific, very bland, I guess, in terms of casting. So, Megan.
Yes.
Have holiday movies evolved at all in recent years?
I think they have, and I don't necessarily think the execution of it has been great.
Right.
You know, like, I love the intent, but it's not, you know, Lifetime has the Little series, which stars Kelly Rowland.
Which was great. I loved that
yeah.
one.
We did one, Miracle in Motor City, we covered, which was, you know, so there's a ton of like Black Christmas movies and LGBTQ plus Christmas movies. But then, like, I remember that lesbian Christmas movie last year.
It was so bad.
It was so bad. And the thing is, it was like set in modern day. And I'm like, this actually feels anti-progressive because this man is running for mayor and his daughter can't be a lesbian. Dick Cheney's daughter's a lesbian. Like, what are we talking about? Like, we're past this, I thought. And it honestly felt like they should have just been like, this is set in 1996. And so that's what I mean with the execution hasn't been great. I haven't seen the rebooted Home Alone yet because I honestly don't want to.
No, not at all.
So it's like, I think instead of rebooting, and I don't know, I'm an Irish Catholic white woman. Don't let me make the movies. I know that. But I don't know what, you know, the Cristela one we saw, that was Lifetime as well. And it's
Holiday in Santa Fe.
Holiday in Santa Fe.
I can't wait to watch
it. It's about a Mexican family and the store that they own. So there's that happening. Maybe I gotta get CJ to write a Filipino Christmas movie.
Oh, I would love to see that. I would also, I'm so glad, I can't wait to see Cristela's because I agree that Mexicans cherish, revere, love, are inspired by Christmas. There's so many ample opportunities within the Mexican Christmas tradition to have meet cutes, for example.
Yeah.
Posada culture is all about visiting all the homes in the neighborhood. You like invite everybody into your home naturally.
Ooh, so it's
like,
stressful.
Speed dating. Very stressful, but also great, ample opportunity to have a different drink in a different place and just meet your neighbors and possibly fall in love. I mean, excellent opportunity. Also the food. I mean, we're talking pozole. We're talking like these very rich, meaty, hot stews. And if you can't.
Okay, that sounds really horny when you said it. Rich, meaty, hot stew.
I was going to say corny.
It's a very horny and very porny type of a soup. I mean, if you don't fall in love with some pozole, there's no hope for you.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Netflix also did just have, it's out already, Single All the Way, which is their first gay Christmas movie, and interracial. It's with Michael Urie, right. And Jennifer Coolidge is in it, and the cutest black man I ever done seen. And I said, okay, this is happening. I think what I want to see a little more of is, but I say this about everything I watch, like, can we actually mix the races? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? As opposed to being like, that over there is for you.
Right.
And that is for you. So anytime we can kind of start to mix it up, have some fun, bring in, as you're saying, the specifics of different cultures. Let's not pretend that people don't come with their differences, but let's have fun with them. Let's shake it up.
Okay, well, now I'm like, maybe I need to write a movie about me going to Filipino Christmas because it is popping.
Yes, Megan.
And I do a joke about this where it's like me, 75 Filipino people, and then two white husbands. And they they always want to talk to me. And I'm like, get away from, like, it's like, I want to talk to the Filipino people.
Right.
And
they're
like,
which,
yeah, they're like, which one's yours? I'm like, go. It's the one in the LeBrons. Leave me alone.
Okay, so holiday tropes in movies. My pet peeve, I'm going to go first because my pet peeve's for real. So my pet peeve is that every single woman starts out most of the time. You have a single woman who starts out kind of cranky, who through the magic of Christmas finds love and then becomes like a nice person. Do you know what I mean? Like one of a real two good examples in one of my favorite movies. I mean, I can't even believe I'm going to say anything negative about this movie because I love it so much. But in The Family Stone, both Rachel McAdams, Amy, and Sarah Jessica Parker are both not happy people at the beginning of the movie. And then they Sarah Jessica switches partners and she ends up with his brother. And then Amy decides to open her heart to the EMT who has been pining after her for like 20 years and brings her a poinsettia on Christmas morning. And then suddenly everyone's like in love. And it's like, well, like, I feel like they could have been happy people and still been happy people without finding love in the middle. But I guess that's my big thing. It's like, why do we always have to make the single ladies mad until they find a man? And it's a man who makes them happy at the end of the
always
movie.
A man.
So that is my pet peeve. Naomi, what about you?
Well, I think mine is also very much in line with that being, why is it that the reason usually the woman has not found love is because of this pesky job of hers.
All
that work and all that office time, she can't make it happen. I'm a workaholic. It's like, honey, it's not a disease. It's doing what you need to pay the bills, okay? And it feels like love is supposed to be the 12-step program. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can't stand that. It's like, you can have a job and meet a man. I've done it many a time. It's called going to work hungover.
Yeah. Okay? Also, Hollywood famously takes 2, if not 3 weeks off. Like, if any of us wanted to email our agents or managers right now, they'd be like, see you in 2022.
Totally.
So I don't know why we keep writing these movies that are like, we're working up until Christmas. It's like, none of us are. Yeah, right. I would say one of my pet peeves is that I know you didn't ask me, but I'm just
I was going to.
It's one of my pet peeves where I just keep talking. Is that the villain, quote unquote villain, comes from outside of the family? No, that's not Holiday. That's not Holiday.
Yes.
Let's have more villains that are just mother daughter relationships.
Yes.
Okay,
sisters in law are always the villains.
We don't need a Rasputin. All right. We do not need a burglar. We just need an aunt who drank too much. And that's a villain in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Grace?
So my pet peeves, it's a bit different, but I think you guys will appreciate it. So one of the tropes of holiday movies, the consumption of hot cocoa. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now, I love me hot cocoa. Don't get me wrong. But ne'er is there a character in a holiday movie who says, no, no, sorry, I'm lactose intolerant. I couldn't possibly. They all drink the cocoa like they can all just consume milk willy nilly. When we all know for a fact that shit is going to give you the toots.
Yes.
For hours, if not days afterwards.
Hours, days.
I mean,
great.
And they're in like regular clothes. Yes. Nobody's just in sweats. Everyone's in a pant with a button, in a turtleneck with a bra.
No.
Yeah. Layers in your house? I am letting my titties hang free at my mother-in-law's.
Hello. It's insane.
You guys, but so why do we love them so much? Why do we love holiday movies? Naomi.
Because nothing is simpler than poinsettias and kissing. It is like so, like this, the way you're saying, Alyssa, you're watching these as you're making your cookies, as you're canning, you know, as you're jarring various foods. It is like a beautiful soundtrack to existence. Because every now and then you're like focused on something. Then every time you look up, you're like, she's smiling and it's snowing. Okay. And then you just go back to whatever you're doing. It's a really just, I think, emotionally, it's a balm.
I agree. And I think sometimes it almost like helps get you in the spirit. Do you know what I mean? Like I've been, it's like sometimes I have to see, and this is something that during the 90s and early 2000s, I felt was really lacking. They really kind of went like minimalist with the Christmas decorations. But in the past couple of years, I really feel that they have been just like these lush wonderlands of Christmas joy. You know, a light on every tree, like the every wreath is on every house, like the Santa is on the roof. And I really do find that like, I'm not going to lie. When I watched the Christmas setup, I was like, you know what? Fuck, I don't have enough lights on my bushes. And I went out and put more lights on my bushes. I was like, I'm like, I can do better. And I put more lights on my trees because my husband's going to come home and it's going to be like we landed in that great neighborhood in Queens, you know, where it's just like everyone's just competing.
Nobody in Christmas movies, this is why I love them, is concerned about taking down the decorations. It's somebody else's job. They don't have to worry about it.
That's a good point. Yes. That's a good point.
I love that. It's just, imagine if you could apply that to every facet of life where you could just do something and not have to worry about the consequences and never have to take things down or clean things up. You could just wear a sweater.
Well, this is why you're too high functioning, Grace. A lot of us do that already.
See, it's how I feel about watching cooking shows. I was like, I know Ina Garten and Ree Drummond have people who clean all those dishes up.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we love about holiday movies, or is it just that they're a bomb, like Naomi said?
I think it's also a time of year where we're not really doing a lot, you know, like it's movie watching time. And so you're soothing, you're hopefully off work, and it's, you know, like people always are like, why don't we have stuffing year round? Well, that wouldn't be good.
Yes.
We need stuffing just at Thanksgiving. And we need holiday movies just at this time because it does help us get in the spirit. It signifies it's that time. And it's a real touchstone for the time of year we had, especially after these last, I was going to say 2 years, but it's really been 6 years, five years, 10 years. It's maybe since 9/11. You know, we just, ever since 9/11, we've needed a holiday movie.
I agree. And now that we have talked about what we like and don't like about holiday movies, we're going to take a break. And when we get back, we're going to play Defend Your Movie. Housekeeping before we get back to the show. I want to remind you to check out this week's Pod Save America episode for a re-airing of Crooked's live stream, What a Year. This episode gives a proper send-off to 2021 and includes sketches, interactive audience games, holiday carols, and more from your favorite Crooked hosts, including yours truly, Aaron Ryan, Kieran Deal, and our producer, Caroline Reston. She's funny as fuck. What a Year raised over $50,000 for Vote Save America's No Off Years Fund. Listen to What a Year on the Pod Save America feed wherever you get your podcasts. All right, welcome back. Now, rather than getting petty, we're going to do a new segment that's a Fight Club petty hybrid. We're very creatively calling Defend That Movie. We'll give everybody 60 seconds, and Caroline is keeping time to name, defend, and make a plea to listeners why your favorite holiday movie is the best and definitive holiday movie. Here are the rules. There are no rules. There are also no stakes. This is just fun, and I'm just happy to be here with you assholes.
Aww. Okay.
Up first, Megan Gailey, defend your movie.
Okay, you have caught me at a very passionate time because last night I went to see Home Alone be accompanied by the LA Philharmonic at the Walt Disney Concert Hall. It was so incredible. I mean, they played into 20th Century Fox, like into the credits. I'm wearing my Home Alone shirt. I love all the Home Alone merch. The kids are so funny. I mean, I know watching a movie in a theater is thrilling. Do it in a concert hall. Uncle Frank is freaking Bill Burr. This man is hilarious. we've got families. The families do have inner fighting. Buzz and Kevin hate each other. The mom and dad are really realistic. Also, this thing people are always like, how did Peter McAllister pay for all of them to go to France? It's not him. It's the mom's brother who paid for everybody to go to France, okay? And I think Peter upgraded Frank, his wife, and his wife, and Peter into first class. But you've got Snow, you've got Winnetka, you've got rich people pretending they're not rich. I mean, it's just so beautiful. I love it.
Time's up. All right. That was good. I never would have picked Home Alone as a movie, but like you've persuaded me a little bit.
Wow. Wow.
No.
Megan, you did the Lord's work.
CJ and I are also doing the Home Alone house Lego set. It must have 10,000 pieces in it.
That's what I want to do.
It's really good. I did tweak my back in Hawaii, and so he's going to have to get me a stand to do my Legos on, like a woman who lives in a retirement community.
Okay, Caroline, reset the timer. Grace Parra, Jani, go.
Bridget Jones' Diary, my favorite movie of the holiday season, a couple reasons why. Okay, first of all, an amazing story, an amazing character. So much of it takes place during the holiday season, during New Year's Eve. The very first scene, she's singing karaoke to All By Myself, by herself, on the sofa. It's incredible. But here's another reason, little known reason, that I personally love Bridget Jones' Diary. The introduction of the holiday turkey curry buffet, which is like a post-Thanksgiving, pre-Christmas specific holiday that I don't think gets enough justice. I mean, they created a whole damn holiday within the holiday season with the turkey curry buffet. And I love it. I love Colin Firth in this movie. He wears his little reindeer sweater. I mean, is there anybody dreamier? No. Hugh Grant. Oh my God. Daniel Cleaver. He's so dreamy. Who wouldn't want to tap that? Like he gives you a little bit of affection and you're like, yes, I'm in. The supportive friends. I mean, she's got amazing supportive friends who are there for her constantly. And also like fuck off when she's about to get laid by Colin Firth. It's great. That's great friendship there. Nothing better than the holiday season. Bridget Jones' Diary, guys. It's my holiday season movie.
And London. London is beautiful.
And London.
And they all wear Christmas jumpers.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. They do.
Okay. All right. I'm up next. Guys, I'm going retro. My favorite holiday movie, and let me just say first that all very old movies are somewhat problematic. So like, let me just stipulate that up front. But White Christmas. Okay, Irving Berlin.
Okay.
Bing Crosby, Danny Kaye. Here's the thing. They get together and know each other because they were in the war together and one saved the other's life. And so, of course, they end up getting together to form a song and dance duo that takes America by storm, only to find out that their beloved Colonel Waverly has left. He led their platoon. He's now in Vermont, of course, because every Christmas movie should take place in Vermont. And he's in Vermont and they are there and he's in. There's been no snow in Vermont. And so they get the whole company together to do a performance and they find love. The women are wearing glittery poinsettias at every turn. The dancing is amazing. The singing is amazing. And my single best part at the end is when they've been waiting for snow. They get everybody from the platoon to come up. They celebrate Colonel Waverly. And at the very end, the snow comes and Bing Crosby, dressed as Santa, makes this movement with his hand and every time he raises his hand, I get the chills and the snow is falling and everybody says, Merry Christmas.
Beautiful.
So anyway, that's mine. Yeah. You can't. Was Bing
good to women?
I mean, there's like some misogyny for sure. And like, they talk to women about like, they're a little bit stupid, but I'm talking about the snow. The snow comes, and that, to me, is. And they have the best Christmas trees.
It's my turn, Alyssa.
All right, well, Naomi, you were not prepared, so I was giving you extra time. Naomi?
Oh, you think I don't know now? You think I need a full four rounds? Listen.
Naomi.
Caroline, start that clock.
Naomi, please. And you get an extra 30 seconds.
A Christmas Story. Are you kidding me?
What?
This is a film that captures the childhood longing, the desperate, Mabel, I'm having a conversation. The childhood longing, the desperation, the darkness. It, to me, captures what it is to be a kid and be so desperate for something and then discovering, look, it ain't that deep. You can't, whatever you want is not actually great. The bully is the most evil child I've ever seen. Do you remember a child's tongue gets stuck, Maybelline, to a frozen pole, and I thought, he's not gonna have a tongue anymore. I felt like it captured the like nostalgia of Christmas, but also like the kind of like the darkness of it, the grotesqueness, the extent to which we have these huge expectations of Christmas that it can never ever meet. Okay, I saw that movie as a child and I looked in the face of darkness and I said, this is someone who also knows suicidal ideation and this is a movie for me. I'm done. Time.
You guys, happy holidays. Happy holidays. May we continue watching these somewhat problematic but also sort of awesome movies that give us all the feels and all the lights and all the tinsel, which everyone who owns a cat or dog, careful, because tinsel can be deadly. I just like to flag that. Tinsel and poinsettias, people, put them out of reach. Okay, thank you to Naomi Ekperigin, Megan Gailey, and Grace Parajani. We will be off next week for the holiday break, but don't worry, if you're missing Hysteria, what's better than a re-listen? Catch up on some of our favorite episodes and interviews with all of our amazing guests we have had in 2021, from Hillary Clinton to Cynthia Nixon and Dr. Heather Iribunda and Zero Fucks Senator Mazie Hirono and my pal Monica Lewinsky. We'll link some of our favorite episodes in the show notes. We hope you have a happy and healthy holiday season. We'll see you in 2022. I am from another planet. This nation, fuck Janet.
But these girls gotta fan it. Y2K email and scan it. Don't take no phone. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer, and Brian Semmel is our associate producer. Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis are the sound engineers, and our editor is Sarah Gibolaska and the folks at Chapter 4. Thank you to our digital team, Nara Melkonian, Mia Kelman, Milo Kim, and Matt DeGroot.